The Sin Is Not podcast is brought to you by Alamo Drafthouse. It's Tarantino month. This is January 2016, by the way, Cody.
New year.
New year, new you.
Yeah, so, I am new.
So they're in honor of Quentin Tarantino's latest film, The Hateful Eight, which I still haven't seen, by the way, because I just don't care about Tarantino. I know it's kind of sacrilegious to say. Yeah. I just don't give a shit. Anyway, in honor of The Hateful Eight, Drafthouse is showing up all of his earlier films. Coming up on Wednesday, January 13th, 2016, Alamo Drafthouse Westlake's Pulp Fiction Quote Along. That's, I'm sure, where most people were introduced to Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, it's my favorite Tarantino movie. It's pretty obvious, but it's amazing.
You're such a chump picking Pulp Fiction over something obscure. I don't know.
Yeah, Death Proof, my favorite Tarantino movie.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that one.
No, I like Pulp Fiction, and then I like Inglourious Basterds. Actually, Kill Bill Volume 1 is probably my second one.
Yeah, I prefer Pulp Fiction. That was a great year for movies, by the way, 1994. That's the year of that's the year everybody's mad that Forrest Gump beat out both Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction as Best Picture that year.
Oh yeah.
But I think all three of those movies are great.
I was 5 years old.
Well, I was 14. No, 16. I turned 16 that year. But I was 15 in the summer when those movies came out, so. The first, you want to know what the first movie is I drove to?
Ninja Turtles?
No. It was Star Trek Generations.
How did that turn out for you?
It was all right. There was a heavy Jack in the Box tie-in with that movie for some reason. Because when you think Star Trek, you think Jack in the Box.
Well, indirectly, maybe.
How?
Maybe some nerds just loading up on there with their 99-cent tacos.
Well, you know what? There was a because I saw the movie at what is now the Bijou, what was formerly Crossroads Theater. And there's a Jack in the Box right there.
Oh, yeah.
So it all worked out just fine.
And here you are years later.
Here I am, 21
still going to Star Trek movies.
21 years later. Oh, now I'm complaining about them.
Most nerds typically do in their old age.
Hey, even Simon Pegg was like, that Star Trek Beyond trailer was garbage. Did you see that?
I did not see that, but that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and he wrote the fucking movie, so.
I know.
This month of Tarantino, go see Pulp Fiction.
And everything else that they're showing, because I think they're showing pretty much all of his films.
Yeah, I don't know. I know
they're showing Glorious Bastards for sure.
Are they showing Jackie Brown? I think that's the one that gets forgotten a lot.
Yep, they're showing Jackie Brown.
Okay, so anyway, this is Pulp Fiction on Wednesday, January 13th, 2016, 7:30 p.m. at Alamo Drafthouse, Westlakes. It is a quote-along, so, you know, you can talk about Marcellus Wallace getting fucked like a bitch. Things like that.
And milkshakes.
Milkshakes. And, you know, the Royale with cheese thing.
Oh, yeah. They speak English and what?
Yeah. Yep. Bad motherfucker. All those things.
I have to say, one of the biggest laughs in any movie of all time is Marvin getting shot in the face.
And his head just explodes all over the back of the...
It's my favorite thing. One of my favorite scenes in a movie ever.
Is that? Do you think that's the worst performance by a
Phil Lamar?
No, not Phil, but Quentin Tarantino
as an actor.
Like worst performance by a director in his own movie.
It's really weird because I it feels like overwhelmingly racist. I mean, like, he wrote the scene, he put himself in it so he could like do that.
Yeah,
it's very odd.
Yes.
And it's not a funny line or scene at all.
Yeah. Has he put himself in any other movies? I can't remember.
Ooh, boy.
I don't remember at all.
I can't remember.
It's not like M. Night Shyamalan, who got to be like the hero in one of his movies. Anyway. We're getting off topic here. Anyway, buy your tickets for Pulp Fiction Quote Along at drafthouse.com. Let's go ahead and start the show.
In a world filled with movie podcasts, three critics from the juggernaut media market of San Antonio decided to change the entire course of the internet. A feat attempted by many and conquered by many. To produce a relatively listenable podcast. Devastating truth bombs.
Brace yourselves, guys. The Muppets are puppets. You know that, right?
No! Wait! Oh, please, no!
They're puppets.
Don't ruin it!
And
Muppets are puppets.
This is kind of
hard facts.
Yeah, not Kevin Feige or Feig, whatever. Feig. I think it's Feige.
Is it really?
I have no idea.
Asking the important questions.
What is that? What was that I just saw right now? It was like a fat Iron Man.
That's a Hulkbuster.
Hulkbuster armor.
That's how he fights the Iron Man.
This is the CineSnob Podcast.
Welcome to episode 73 of the CineSnob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Villafania.
And where is he? He was right here just a second ago.
Yeah.
Kiko Martinez will not be joining us unless he calls in to the Skype like last time in the middle of the show.
Well, we're all on Kiko standard time.
But anyway, this is our top 10 show.
Yeah.
Since no movies open between, what, like Christmas Day and probably January 15th?
Yeah, well, it's partially that and partially because Star Wars is making $30 million on a Tuesday.
Holy shit, man. So it's finally – it passed domestically Titanic already.
Yeah, and it should have Avatar by the time this podcast is online.
That is crazy. Have you been reading anything about it? Like some of the think pieces that are coming out?
No, not really. I mean, I've been checking the numbers and stuff because I'm very curious to see if it hits $1 billion domestic, which I think is totally possible at this point, especially because you know they're going to keep it in theaters forever.
Well, one of the things I was reading on, and I don't know. I don't want to call it a backlash, but Huffington Post posted a thing, and a friend of mine shared it on Facebook, like 40 plot holes in The Force Awakens. And it wasn't really 40. Some of it were just like they didn't like the dramatic choices of the film. But a few of the critics I follow on Twitter, some of them are crazy. I'm not going to name any names, but have started to speculate if people will see fault in this movie when something when Rian Johnson delivers something that maybe is more original, which of course is all pure speculation, but just wondering if this may be like too safe of a movie going forward.
Well, I've thought about that a little too, and I think at least in my opinion, I think that they needed to push the reset button and reestablish everything. And it had to be some kind of comfort food on some level,
right,
to people. I mean, I think we've all been saying for a while now, it had to take off the stink of the prequels and make it okay to enjoy Star Wars again. So I think when people will look back, they'll see it as a really good table setter. And maybe not the most creative thing, especially if Rian Johnson can do anything with it, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think people are going to look down on it at all?
Well, I mean, they might be a little bit more nitpicky, but I think it served its purpose perfectly well.
Have you read any of the stuff that George Lucas has been saying?
Didn't he say something like he didn't like how it was familiar?
Well, the comment that got all the attention was that he said he sold the franchise to white slavers, which he backtracked on, which unfortunately has colored a lot of stuff. But he wasn't fond of the movie as it was too retro, he called it. They wanted to make a retro film for the fans. I think his initial comment upon seeing it before it was released, he said that the fans would love it. And, you know, he wrote treatments for a sequel trilogy that Disney was like, no thanks to. Which I'm curious what those were, because I don't think that, you know, the prequels aren't great movies. Some parts of them are really bad. I think their biggest limitation is George Lucas's unwillingness to relent any kind of creative control. you know, that's too much his voice. So I'm curious what these treatments looked like. Like, what were they about? Because certainly they weren't, like rehashes of, you know, the first films.
Yeah. And I was always curious to see what the Michael Arndt story was going to be too, especially because he was apparently like a Star Wars historian.
There's a lot of conflicting stuff out there. I got the book for Christmas and apparently it's full of production stuff, The Art of Star Wars, and I haven't read it yet. But like you were pointing out to me, we were sharing quotes back and forth on Facebook about like what they said the initial thing was going to be. Like Arndt's screenplay focused on new characters and J.J. Abrams wanted to go back and give the old characters one last swan song. But none of that really happened.
No, it didn't. And that's actually kind of funny too, because like, yeah, from what I had read, Michael Arndt's story was going to focus on the children of Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. And that was the idea behind it. It's kind of making the legacy thing. And then, apparently he was just taking too long and J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan started from scratch is what I heard. Which is interesting because Michael Arndt has a writing credit on The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So something has to be in there.
Yeah. They didn't start from scratch as much as they want to say, because, you know, obviously whatever arbitration took place, he got the credit. It's curious because there's some, I read an article, I think it was on birthmoviesdeath.com that pointed out it bears the scars of rewrites and reshoots. Like they didn't, because I think Kasdan and Abrams admitted they didn't have the script finished when they started shooting.
No, they were mapping out plot points kind of on the fly.
So, you know, there's some elements in there, like the whole.
But how insane is that, by the way? The fact that they were winging like the biggest movie of all time. I know it's not unusual for that to happen, but just. You would think there would be immense prep work coming into this movie with the pressure that was there.
And not only that, but the fact that this needed to be a good movie to make people happy. Like if it was okay, like Jurassic World, if it hadn't delivered, people would have been like, eh, you know. But if this one hadn't delivered, if this had been like just something people hated, they would have died inside. Like the little parts of their soul would have been gone forever after the prequels like broke their hearts.
Yeah.
If this turned out to be some steaming turd, they would have been like, oh shit, my youth is over. So I'm curious there's, you know, cause there's a scene that was cut, you know, that's in the trailer that's pointed out where Lupita Nyong'o's character, the Maz hands a lightsaber to Leia, to Carrie Fisher, that's not in the final film because they left the character behind. Originally she had come with them to that planet and they said that she just didn't fit there, but like they shot the sequence and rendered it, which seems unusual to me. I don't know if that's just how budgets, like special effects are so cheap now that they can just do that. But it seems like to render out an entire scene and then be like, nope, we got to cut it. It just seems strange to me.
Yeah, I know. I definitely agree with that.
Anyway, biggest movie of all time, probably very shortly.
Yeah, they expect it to cross Avatar by Monday.
Good Lord. And it hasn't even opened in China.
Yeah. Well, and that's just domestic, I believe.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's something like 750 or 60 million, I think.
I'd like to go see it again.
How many times have you seen it?
Only twice.
Yeah, same. I would like to maybe try to see it at the drive-in.
Oh, look at you. I've never been to a drive-in, but you've been to that one.
You need to go. I think you would really like it there, actually.
Now that I got a nicer car, maybe.
Well, when I went the first time, I didn't even sit in the car.
Mm.
I brought a giant, like one of those giant
sleeping
Iowa
bag?
Big boxes.
A what?
You know, the boom box, like the giant ass things. And just put some chairs outside and sat outside.
Oh, look, I have a nice car now, so I'm going to sit in it as much as I can.
It's $8 and you get a double feature. Like you really can't beat it.
What would they pair with Star Wars?
Well, right now they're pairing it with some animated movie, I think. But I mean, I think they're supposed to be showing the Hateful Eight there soon, which will be interesting. But let me see what they've got it paired with right now, because I remember looking at it and going, ugh, I guess I'll leave early. Because it's The Good Dinosaur in Star Wars right now.
Oh. Anyway.
They always have weird pairings. Like, one of the pairings right now is Alvin and the Chipmunks and Joy.
Maybe they figure the kids will fall asleep by the time you get to watch Joy.
And the other one is Daddy's Home and Creed.
What a weird combo.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and move into our top 10. What do you say?
I was thinking some more ado, but I guess we'll end it.
No further ado.
Okay.
We're done. So, coming in, we're going to go like we did last year, from 10 to 1. We'll go around. Well, we'll go back and forth, I guess, since we don't need
we'll
to go around.
We'll play ping pong.
We'll throw in what Kiko's got, too. And we'll judge him harshly, since he's not here. So, starting with number 10, Cody.
Yeah, you know, 10 is – I always write in my articles that 10 is always going to be a revolving door. And this year there were some movies that I thought could have fit here. I almost went with something like The Big Short or Brooklyn. But in the end, I went with The Hateful Eight. We'll talk about this movie a little bit more when it comes out theatrically or opens wide on the 8th. But I guess that's – no, it's actually open wide this week, isn't it?
I think they pushed it up.
Damn. Well, why aren't we – we should be reviewing that, I guess.
I told you maybe, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So maybe we'll cover it next week.
Yeah, they pushed it up to the 30th for some reason.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably middle of the pack Tarantino. It's not as good as his best work. But I mean, I liked it personally better than Django Unchained, but I know I'm in the minority with thinking that movie's just okay. But there's a lot of really great stuff in it. There's the, you know, the score is great. It's shot really, really nicely. But I just think it's got a lot of really great elements to it. The performances are really good. And I know that you really like Walton Goggins, and he's really, really good in this. He's kind of like the secret weapon in the movie. And he gives a really good performance and kind of steals the movie a bit, which I was happy. I you know, as a fan of him, I was wondering what kind of role he was going to have, but it's a pretty sizable and significant role. So yeah, like I said, middle of the pack Tarantino, but still good enough, funny enough, bloody enough to wind up at the number 10 spot.
Walton Goggins, I've been a fan of from Justified. And I may have mentioned this before. But I didn't like the second G.I. Joe movie. Did you ever see it?
No.
With Dwayne Johnson. Walton Goggins has a small role in that as like a warden of a high security prison that is holding Cobra Commander and Destro. And he has to say all this stupid G.I. Joe bullshit. Like talk about it. Oops. I just got a ding. Oh, Kiko won't be joining us soon.
Oh, thanks for
that
confirming.
That was a message that just dinged. You didn't hear it, but anyway. Yeah, so he had to say all this stupid bullshit about Snake Eyes and Cobra Commander, and it just made me sad. Oh. But to hear that Walton Goggins gives a good performance in this movie, that's it's getting a lot of attention. I don't know that it's getting a lot of attention that I've seen outside of the technical aspects of it. I haven't seen anybody say it's a good movie, but that it was a good movie going experience, because these are all the people that went to see it in 70mm.
Yeah. It's a divisive movie. People are either loving it or hating it, but I think it's being pretty well received. But I mean, it's, you know, it's Tarantino. I mean, you gotta be a fan of that type of stuff in order to, I don't think he's going to be gaining any new fans with this movie, but
yeah.
You know what you're getting into when you watch a Tarantino movie.
Yeah. All right. My number 10, I always stick my summer favorites in here. But this year I went with Jurassic World and The Force Awakens. Now both movies have problems. I enjoyed them both. But it was a nice little slice of nostalgia for me. I know you weren't fond of Jurassic World basically at all. But it's one of those things, like I mentioned earlier, that it kind of had a nice return to form to it. Like it, I loved the first Jurassic Park movie and it influenced my childhood so much, even though I was 13 when it came out. But, for it to come back and be fun again was nice enough for me to include it in my top 10 in the bonus spot. Plus I just didn't think there were that many good movies this year. That Jurassic World was actually legitimately one of my favorites. And then, of course, Star Wars Force Awakens, we've talked about a million times, but it was fun. That's what my top 10 – that's what my 10 spot is. It's just fun. It's not serious.
I guess I can respect that.
It's not the serious spot. It's the fun spot. It's like a G spot, but a 10. So for number 10, let's see. Kiko Martinez has Grandma. He calls it a sweet, funny, delightfully acerbic film with starring actress Lily Tomlin doing her best work since 1976's Nashville. Have you seen Grandma?
I have not seen Grandma.
I have not either. So,
no comments.
So, I don't know. Sounds like a piece of shit to me, but, you know. All right, number nine.
Number nine for me is The End of the Tour. I thought about putting this a little bit higher, but I kind of readjusted some stuff, and it might go higher based on, you know, when I eventually rewatch everything, which I didn't get to do this year. But yeah, I just really dug the long philosophical talky dialogue of the film, and I think that there's, I mean, look, Jason Segel is incredible in it. I just watched this movie again the other day, and his performance is really fantastic. Just kind of the vocal nuances he puts on, this hint of sadness that he plays Wallace with, and just kind of, you know, there's several times in the film, you know, where Jesse Eisenberg's character is pressing record on this recorder, and Jason Segel does this great thing where he sort of acknowledges it and realizes that, oh, he's not actually having a moment with this guy, it's all being recorded, and so there's a real hint of sadness when he does that, and it's just a really great subtle performance from Segel, and that's kind of what makes the movie so great to me.
Yeah, I really like this movie too. I had it at my number five spot, actually. I'm curious to know David Foster Wallace's family and friends kind of disowned the movie. I still wonder what kind of problems they had with it. I never really followed up on that. I'm curious to know if maybe Siegel's performance is a little too gentle.
I don't know.
Because I'd always heard of David Foster Wallace as kind of an asshole.
Oh, really?
Maybe I'm mistaken there, but just kind of.
More mistaken than bacon. That's what I always say.
Maybe I'm thinking of one of those atheist writers that died. Who was that? Not Richard Dawkins, but the other guy. I don't know. Let me look up famous atheist. What was his
R.I.P.
name?
R.I.P. Freely.
What was that guy's name? God damn it. I can't remember. Why can't I look up famous atheist authors and it's just...
Let's just halt the entire show while you figure this out.
I don't know, but whoever he was a fucking, like, gigantic prick. Anyway, but maybe that's what David Foster Wallace's family was upset.
Oh, what's his name from The Fault in Our Stars?
David Green, or
no,
not David
no,
Green.
The person that Willem Dafoe played.
Oh,
it would have been funnier if I would have known the character's name.
I forgot about Willem Dafoe being in there. I like that movie, and then that Willem Dafoe part's not great though.
No, it feels like it's just pasted in there.
Yeah. Anyway, The End of the Tour, number five for me. Number nine for you. Number nine for Mr. Kiko Martinez is The Revenant.
Meh. I guess we can't talk about it quite yet. Comes out on the
8th. Oh, yeah. Your embargo's still in effect, isn't it?
I think so.
Mine was lifted a long time ago. Anyway, it's fine. Let's just say
it's
that.
It's okay.
It's fine. All right, number eight.
I think you got to give your number nine, Bucko.
Oh, shit, I do. I'm sorry. My number nine... Man, I totally fucked that up. My number nine is Man vs. Snake, The Long and Twisted Tale of Nibbler. This was a movie I saw at Fantastic Fest. I don't believe it's been released anywhere else. It's like a sequel of sorts to The King of Kong. Features a lot of the same people, namely Walter Day and Billy Mitchell. It's the story of this guy named Tim McVeigh, not the Oklahoma City bomber, Tim McVeigh.
It's Timothy.
You know, it does. That's like the first line when they introduce him, that he's not the Oklahoma City bomber. He's just a. If you've seen stuff like The King of Kong, he's not featured in The King of Kong, but I think he does make an appearance in Chasing Ghosts, another documentary that I really love. This could be like the. You know, like the third part of a trilogy with those three movies. He's competing with this game on this game called Nibbler, which I thought was fake when I first saw all this stuff coming out, because literally the filmmakers were passing out at Fantastic Fest buttons that read, "What the fuck is Nibbler?" And that's a line in the film. And apparently it's a very not well-known video game. I guess about a snake that goes around eating stuff.
Question.
Yes.
If nobody knows about the film, why does anyone give a shit? Or no one knows about the game, I should say.
Because it's another story of a sad sack guy triumphing over adversity. This is, see, the difference.
Sounds derivative.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like a kinder, gentler King of Kong. The thing about Nibbler is that it's not a test of skill. It's a test of endurance. Like, you have to be good at the game, but to beat the record, it takes three solid days just due to how the game is structured. So it's a good movie. You'll like it. You won't love it like The King of Kong, because you'll be all, well, why the fuck do I give a shit? Like you do, you motherfucker. But you get to see Billy Mitchell being kind of nice.
No, I don't. Then I really don't want
to
see it.
And you get to see Walter Day, like, you get to see Billy Mitchell being, like, almost like he's the president calling to cheer someone on. They're like, "Oh, could you just call him? It'll mean so much to talk to you."
Ugh.
So, yeah, I know. I know how you feel. But Walter Day is even super weirder in this one, which is hard to do. But yeah. Man vs. Snake, Long and Twisted Tale of Nibbler. Don't give me any shit about it, because you'll like it, you motherfucker. So number eight.
Number eight for me is a movie that is in the 40s on Rotten Tomatoes. And a movie that I wanted to revisit to make sure it belongs here, but I didn't have time. It's called True Story. It's kind of like a true crime movie based on a book with James Franco and Jonah Hill in it. It's a drama. And it's kind of like a cat and mouse game, and I was completely riveted by it the first time I saw it. And it's got a really good performance from James Franco. And I don't know why it was so harshly received by critics. I kind of thought it was great. So I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty stirring defense.
Well, you it's been a while since I've seen it.
You would have gotten OJ off with that one.
Okay. Like, you mean legally?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
My number eight is Brooklyn. A movie that that I know is has some third act issues, but I thought it was well put together enough and sweet enough that I was totally enthralled with the love story that takes place between Saoirse Ronan and Emery Cohen. The stuff with Domhnall Gleeson is pretty slight, and it kind of doesn't really seem to mean anything, other than, you know, it's a young woman being pulled between love and home. You know, the movie almost threatens to be totally about nothing, but I think the performances are really, really good enough, really strong enough to anchor it. And the love story, is nice enough and sweet enough to make me forget how slight the rest of it may be.
You know, the first half of that movie, if it was just based on that, this movie would be in my top five probably, because I loved the first half of the
movie. Oh, yeah. I did too.
It's fantastic.
I don't think the Domhnall Gleeson stuff is bad. I just think
I don't either. It's just not as good as the first half.
It just doesn't feel like anything's really happening.
No, and I don't think it's convincing where it needs to be convincing.
Yeah. Anyway, Kiko's number 8 is a movie called The Second Mother, apparently a Brazilian film.
Which is weird because Kiko's getting a Brazilian right now, and that's why he can't be here.
I know he's
getting his vagina waxed.
He likes to be bare down there, if you know what I mean. Anyway, he says, household dynamics are agitated in this Brazilian film when the estranged daughter of a live-in housekeeper moves in with her mother and the family she works for. I don't know. I didn't see it. Did you?
Nope.
Nope. All right. Another bullshit pick by Kiko Martinez.
Some bullshit movie nobody's ever heard of. Yeah,
fucking great job, Kiko. Can I go see that and get some goddamn popcorn? Or have to sit next to some fucking guy with a ponytail eating a goddamn apple?
with elbow patches.
Yeah. All right. Number 7.
Number 7 for me is a movie that I had a lot of fun with, which is the documentary Finders Keepers. You know, for those of you who don't remember the episode or didn't catch that episode, it's a documentary with the strangest synopsis of all time. A guy goes to one of those storage auctions and purchases a smoker, and inside the smoker is a severed human leg. Basically, this guy has a wish and desire. His one wish in life is to be famous, so he tries to use this leg for fame while the owner of the leg tries to legally get it back. This movie is really, really funny. It's really sweet. It's very odd, and it's sort of like the way I described it was it's sort of in the vein of like American Movie and The King of Kong. And really, I think that someday when it gains some cult status, it can be on the same level as those types of movies. It's just like cult favorites and really great films. And yeah, I mean, there's just such a fascinating look into addiction, but also into this guy's like desire to be famous. Like it's such a fascinating character study. So I really, really love this movie.
Yeah, this is the one movie that I forgot about that I regret not putting in my top 10. Because I really, really did love that movie too. I think it may say more about like a reality TV culture,
yes,
than addiction. Because you know the story of the guy who owns the leg, biologically owns the leg, is fine. It's just kind of a sad tale of addiction and you know, hitting the skids, you know, after some emotional trauma and things and physical trauma. But the story of the guy that finds the leg, it doesn't even seem real.
No, you're totally right. It seems totally surreal. And like, there are some amazing moments of clarity that he has that are just so incredible.
I've talked about this movie with people that have seen it. And my absolute favorite moment is that scene near the end where they're at the shooting that auction,
yes,
bullshit show, whatever it is, like redneck hagglers or,
yeah,
or the South should have won. Uh-huh. Swap meet. And he's trying to sell the Christmas Story leg lamp replica.
Yeah.
Cause it's, you know, leg man. That's what he calls himself. And, you know, you see the footage from the show and a guy buys it and then it cuts to like the documentary footage. And it's mic'd, but they have to subtitle it because you can't hear it because that guy talks like a fucking like a backwoods squatter. He asks the guy that buys it, it's like, you want me to autograph that? And the guy, without missing a fucking beat, just goes, nope.
Yep. There's another line that happens there that's my favorite thing in the movie where he just like all he says is he says something to the effect of, I thought reality TV was supposed to be real. And like, it's the most amazing moment that's, oh man, I really, really like this movie.
All right. My number 7, I went with Room. Again, okay. kind of a shaky third act in that film too, much like Brooklyn. But again, I think the performances are great enough that they overcome it. Obviously, Brie Larson is amazing. Young,
good job saying it correctly that time.
Young Ethan Tremblay is also good. No, Jacob Tremblay. Jacob Tremblay, Ethan Tremblay, and Brie Olson, right? That's who's.
Yeah.
No, Jacob Tremblay is really great. I know you had problems with the room not being big enough, small enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I like, get it.
Like, look, I want my sex dungeons to be tiny.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think it sort of suffers when it gets back to the real world. I think the escape scene in the middle of the film, while kind of preposterous at times, is pretty riveting. I think it goes downhill from there. I don't think it goes far downhill, but I think I don't want to say worse because that sounds bad. But the back half of the film is not nearly as good as the first half. But I think Brie Larson still pretty much the front runner for best actress in this film, right? I don't think is there anything that's come out of left field
I mean, like Kate Blanchett and Carol's gotten a little bit of traction, but
yeah. I'm sure Jennifer Lawrence will be there too, just because she's always there. All right, number seven, Kiko Had Amy.
That's a good documentary.
It's a good documentary about the late Amy Winehouse. That's one of those films when we talked about it. I don't know about you. I don't remember the discussion we had, but by the time I became aware of Amy Winehouse, she was already the cartoon character of a drug addict.
Right.
But this was pretty revealing in the fact that she was, I don't know if weak willed is it. Yeah. I mean, she was young. She was 27 when she died. So maybe she was just a dumbass kid, but, you know, was a victim of circumstance, I guess, falling in with the wrong people and then just destroying her life. I mean, that the stuff where she's singing with Tony Bennett is amazingly powerful because, you know, here's like this young girl and there's old Tony Bennett. He just doesn't give a shit.
I know, but I mentioned this a couple times, maybe even when we were talking about this before, but if you ever get a chance to watch old SNL clips of Alec Baldwin doing his Tony Bennett impression.
I've seen some of those.
It's really, really funny.
I love that he's just like, hey, I'm here to sing, young crooner. And he's just wearing a suit. Like, he just comes in, that's it. But yeah, I agree with this pick for Kiko. Good job, Kiko.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
All right, number six.
Number six, Straight Outta Compton. One of my favorite movie-going experiences of the year, I think. I don't recall maybe one or two times having more fun watching a movie than this. And it was very unexpected. You know, I had no real knowledge of NWA or the rap culture. I was trying to think of the way to sound the most white.
You did it.
The hip-hop-nomics?
A rap.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, my knowledge of hip hop was like Parappa the Rapper, but
I think I just said a Mr. Show quote.
I had a lot of fun with the movie. I think that again, the third act is a little bit I mean, it's not as bad as I know that you thought it dipped quite a bit in the third act. I didn't think that it dipped that much.
I don't think it dips that much, but I do think it gets a little too concerned. This was also my number six, by the way, so we'll get that out of the way. I do think it gets a little too concerned with making sure that that Dre and Ice Cube don't look too shitty.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I mean, pretty much anything that happens musically in this movie is incredible. Like the musical performance. What is it? The performance in Detroit, I think it is.
Oh yeah, where they tell them not to sing "Fuck the Police."
Yeah, where they basically start a riot.
Yeah.
And then also, like I wrote in my thing, the no Vaseline scene is my favorite scene in a movie this year. Like the way it's edited, the way that like it's hilarious. It's
yeah.
That scene is just so great.
Yeah. Like I said, I mentioned my problems. I think by the time you get to the legacy stuff about Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, you know, because the movie doesn't really care about MC Ren and what's his name? DJ Yella. Like, they don't know. Fuck those guys. But
yeah.
The guy, Jason Mitchell, who plays Eazy-E, probably is the best performance in the film.
He's really good in it, by the way.
And I think because he gets to have the most nuance. Like, he gets to go from good guy to bad guy to good guy.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, after Ice Cube leaves the group, he doesn't really – he's not portrayed as doing anything wrong. You know, and even Dr. Dre's, you know, when he has the high-speed chase through L.A., like, it's because he's upset, not because he was drunk, as it was in real life. So I just think that hinders it just a little bit for me, but I think the first half is so great that it more than makes up for that stuff. And especially the second half shines whenever fucking crazy ass Suge Knight is around.
Yeah. That's all great stuff. I think that it sort of overplays its hand a little by showing like Snoop Dogg and Tupac and stuff like that. But the Suge Knight stuff is really good. I mean, that is, can you think of a scarier villain in a movie than Suge Knight? This
it's true.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. You're right though. When it does like, let's see what, this is when he would have met Snoop. And like, there's Tupac. Hey, Ice Cube, how's that script for Friday coming along?
Yeah. Hey, I got this really cool beat I'm going to show you. And then it's like California.
Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, okay.
We get it.
Yeah. Yes. Those are all things that that happened. Okay, number six for Kiko Martinez is Ex Machina.
Good movie.
I'm surprised this didn't make your top 10 list because you were fucking coming all over its face.
Well, I sort of wiped it up a little bit after a little while. I think Ex Machina is a very good movie. I think I lowered it down like a half a letter grade when I saw it again, but I still really like it. I think that Oscar Isaac is fantastic in it, and so is Alicia Vikander.
She's so hot in this movie.
Yeah, those nuts robot, and bolts.
Yeah, those robot boobs. She is really, really – when there's that last scene where she's like putting herself all together.
Yeah.
That's super hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. What all of y'all like freaked out over the dancing scene that I only thought was okay. I thought the movie was fine. Like, it's good. I don't think it's great.
I think that the main problem is that it tries to outsmart itself, and I think it takes one too many turns in its climax.
Yeah, I think that it tries to be too clever, and it just ends up being like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think they overplay their hand a little bit.
Yeah, but the dancing scene's all right, too. Like, it's not particularly – like, it's not the funniest thing I've ever seen. But some of you guys were creaming your jeans over it because you saw it at South by Southwest, and you got the sickness, as I like to call it.
Kind of like how you put Man vs. Snake on your list, too.
Dude. I saw that in a theater with one other person. there was no, and that was like the least whacked out film at Fantastic Fest. Everybody else was creaming their pants for Crimson Peak,
ugh.
And we all know how that turned out.
Yeah, more like Crimson P.
Whatever. All right, number five.
Number five for me is The Look of Silence, which I don't know if you saw.
I didn't.
It's the sequel to The Act of Killing, and in my opinion, a way better movie than The Act of Killing. It's really harrowing. It's sort of a, you know, it's a look at a guy who confronts people who committed mass genocide and who were responsible for killing his family members, and he goes up to them and asks them face to face why they did what they did and how they could commit genocide. And it's powerful, it's crazy, it's surreal in a bunch of different ways. It's kind of an incredible watch. It's sort of like, you know how you were, you know, I think Citizen Four is a much better movie, but sort of like how you're watching Citizen Four and going like, wow, I'm watching something important right now.
Yeah.
Like I'm watching something that's historical and of substance happening. Same feeling you get when you watch The Look of Silence.
Hmm. So it's a documentary.
Yes, it's a documentary.
All right. My number five was, of course, End of the Tour. According to Kiko Martinez, the number five movie of the year. And I do like this movie, too. I know you didn't. It's he has Sicario.
Yeah.
I know you weren't a fan of it, but I really did like it. It just missed out on my top 10. I don't really know why.
Sicario.
I think maybe for me because Benicio del Toro's character gets a little too action movie-y towards the end of the film. I think that scene – there's a scene near the beginning where they're going into Juarez to basically extract a guy. And it's fucking – it's beautifully shot. This is Roger Deakins, cinematographer. And there's the scene where they cross the border and they're on the bridge and you follow the cars into Juarez. And it basically – Mexico is just a hellhole. I thought was really powerful. And apparently Kiko agrees. Some breathtaking cinematography by 12-time Oscar nominee Roger Deakins. Anyway, you're wrong for not liking Sicario, but that's okay.
Okay.
Is it because your family is a cartel? Is that why?
My family is American-born. Thank you.
Oh, all right. All right, what's your number four?
Number four, Spring, a movie that I saw in the spring. horror movie. I'm not a horror person at all, but this movie really kind of made me rethink everything about the genre a little bit because I realized that, yeah, you can have something that has horror elements but still be, you know, as I described it, a sort of more Richard Linklater than anything else. Lots of walking and talking scenes. It's really well written. It's smart. It's beautifully shot with a lot of drone stuff that's happening through like the Italian coast. Really beautiful looking movie. And just a really good romance story that's sort of packaged in this like I don't know what you would call it, but a kind of monster horror film.
Yeah, body horror, yeah. Lovecraftian.
Yeah, very Lovecraftian. It's just a really good movie, I thought.
Pretty good. I enjoyed it when I saw it. I wasn't crazy about it, but
you weren't creaming Jean.
I wasn't creaming my jeans.
Such a gross term, by the way.
Well, we've said it like seven times already, so I'm gonna keep doing it. What I did cream my jeans for at number four was The Big Short. I know
biopic on Kiko's wiener.
What?
Is it a biopic on Kiko's wiener?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get it?
Yep. I sure do. So this is, of course, a film about the housing crisis and the people that got rich off of it. I just really loved this film. I know you weren't crazy about the celebrity cameos that peppered it, but I thought they all worked pretty well. I think Steve Carell is better in this movie than he was in that bullshit Foxcatcher last year that got him an Oscar nomination. I don't think he'll get any recognition for this year, though. But I just had a lot of fun with this movie, even though it's a terrible, terrible subject matter. It's kind of a Wolf of Wall Street with a moral compass, I wrote. You know, it's the people, they know that they're doing something wrong. They know something bad is going to happen. And we all do. And we all paid the price. I think my favorite scene is when they is it Goldman Sachs that they finally get to go inside at the end? Or is it Merrill Lynch? I can't remember which one.
I can't remember.
And they're like just looking around the floor after the guys have just been thrown out. I thought that was a really great scene, kind of indicative of the whole crisis. Anyway, mm-hmm. I liked The Big Short. Did you?
I did like
you
it.
You did. Kiko didn't
just,
like it.
It just barely missed my top 10.
Number four for Kiko Martinez was Room, which we've already talked about, so we won't talk about it again. I think it's bullshit that he put it that high, but you know how he is.
Yeah.
He sucks. That's stupid. He's a dork.
Mega dweeb.
Nerd. All right. Number three.
Number three for me. I went outside of the box, and I went with a short film called The Lion's Mouth Opens. Normally I wouldn't put a short film documentary on my top 10 list, but fuck you, I did. So Essentially, what it is it's a and I believe we talked about this and reviewed it actually on this very show.
Yeah, you just have a big old hard on for fucking Jason Ritter,
Jason.
And Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yes, and Mariana Palka, who tweeted a picture of her smiling big at the idea that her film made my top three. it's a story about this actress Mariana Palka who decides to get tested for something called Huntington's disease, which is sort of a mix between Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. It's a degenerative disease that attacks both the brain and the body, and it's really terrible.
Yeah.
And the only way you can get Huntington's disease is if your parents have it. If your parents have it, you have a 50-50 shot of getting it. And so Mariana's dad has it, or had it. I can't remember if he was still alive or not. She decides to get tested to see if she has it or not. And it is just an incredibly powerful movie, or short film. And like I said, it packs more emotion into 30 minutes than most movies did in 90 minutes this year. So if you have HBO Go, you can go into the documentary section and watch the film. It's really incredible.
Yeah, and the title comes from a Bob Dylan song.
Yes.
Is it a song or a poem?
It's a poem that he wrote for Woody Guthrie.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Who had Huntington's disease.
Yeah, it is a really, really great little documentary. It doesn't, you know, trade on having star power in it either. It just
– right.
They just happen to be there. Anyway, what number are we on?
Three.
Trace. My number three was a movie called The Martian.
My number two.
So I
guess we can talk about it.
Yeah. You can talk about it all you want. This is a movie that that I really, really enjoyed, even though I thought the NASA scenes were a little on the corny side. Especially when Donald Glover is showing Jeff Bridges.
It's a little Armageddon-y, I guess.
Yeah, definitely a little too Armageddon-y. But the stuff with Matt Damon is all fantastic.
Yeah.
From beginning to end with Matt Damon. Just a great performance by him. It's funny. I think it's important. It's very great. It's very great. Listen to me. I just came to this country. It's really great that both Ridley Scott, who – welcome back.
Yeah.
And Drew Goddard, screenwriter, decided to make it funny, I think.
Yeah.
That was important.
I think that the unsung hero of The Martian is Drew Goddard because – the script is fantastic. Like, I mean, it's really, really funny. Shockingly funny, I think. And it gives Matt Damon a lot to do, and it allows Matt Damon to be funny. And it's really smartly written. And I think that the script for The Martian is one of the best of the year.
After we've been talking about this, you and I, but I've been watching the Mythbusters marathon that they do. I guess is the second annual. They play every episode starting like Christmas Eve till New Year's, a few days after New Year's. And it reminded me how much like of that kind of style seemed to be in The Martian. Like it's science, but it's funny at the same time, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not obviously not exactly, but it's just sort of a thing that can bring science to the mainstream without being.
Well, I think one of its. You know, one of the things that's best about it is that it's a pretty it's a pretty intense story. I mean, it's, you know, it's a scary story. I mean, the idea that someone is left behind on Mars. I mean, it's
yeah.
But I think that they mix the science stuff and the humor really well. And I think it helps that Matt Damon is able to pull off that character so well because he's a really sarcastic, witty guy.
Yeah.
And I think that they do a really clever job of you know, through the use of like video journals of allowing him to talk and deliver his lines and stuff. So this is a really, really great movie. And I think for me, the most fun that I had watching a movie this year.
Did we talk about this, whether or not this is actually science fiction?
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. For number three, Kiko Martinez. Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Fart. Fart noise. Just a big old fart noise for me. I did not like that movie.
I thought it was fine. I think Michael Fassbender's great in it, but I
have a real problem with the structure of that film, something that he seems to like. Kiko Martinez, god damn it. He's such a sucker. Such a sucker for the Sorkin. I had a problem with the three-act structure being like three different product launches and then like having everybody that Steve Jobs had ever wronged like show up. So he could deal with it.
I thought they made him villainy to a fault. Like, we get it. He's a dick. Like, I mean, enough.
Yeah.
And then just like have him just like act like a dick and then the next second, oh, never mind. Like he changes his thing, his attitude on things in a drop of a hat. But I will say Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yes, finally said it right. Michael Stuhlbarg is great. I think even Seth Rogen is really good.
Lots of buzz for Kate Winslet, who changes her accent in the middle of the movie.
She was fine. She was fine. She's Kate Winslet. What was her accent supposed to be anyway?
I think like Russian, right?
I don't know.
Like something Eastern European.
Yeah.
Czech, maybe.
Czech and mate. Stupid. All right. Well, number two was The Martian for you, right?
Yes.
My number two is Creed. I fucking loved that movie. I don't care who knows it. I think it's obviously going to be a huge launching pad for director Ryan Coogler, who's already in talks, apparently eternally, to be the director of to direct Black Panther for Marvel, and. Hopefully it gets Michael B. Jordan better roles than that shitty Fantastic Four movie that he was in. I've loved Michael B. Jordan since Friday Night Lights, personally. Vince Howard for life, yo. You were a Matt McCoy guy, you fucking asshole. You asshole.
Look, I mean, I'm a Dylan Panthers guy. I mean, I'm not an East
Dude,
guy.
Dude, he went and led he went and led the Dylan super team after that.
Yeah, but I don't.
He won the fucking title.
I don't like East Dillon. That's all I'm saying.
You're so racist. Anyway, I loved Creed. You should too. It's a great, great film. Even though it hits a lot of similar beats as the original Rocky movie, I think it's. I just loved it. So number two for Mr. Kiko Martinez is actually the same as your number five. The Look of Silence. So you agreed.
Fast forward or fast rewind.
Forward. Yeah. Go listen to The Look of Silence. I didn't look at Kiko's stuff soon enough. All right. It's time for the number one movie of the year.
Which is Universal. I think we were Universal last year too, right?
We all picked Boyhood last year.
Yeah.
And all got heartbroken when it kind of went ignored.
I was okay with Birdman.
I was fine with Birdman, but I wanted a little more love for Boyhood. Well, yeah. It was only Patricia Arquette that won, right?
Yes.
And then she went on to star in CSI Cyber. All right. Number one film of the year for all three of us at CineSnob.net is?
Spotlight.
Spotlight.
Yeah. I mean, look, flat out, there is not a better made movie, first of all, than Spotlight. It is... What I wrote is it's pretty much a clinic in filmmaking. It's perfectly paced. It's really well acted. It's really well written. It feels important. It doesn't skirt it doesn't skirt any issues. It takes it head on, but it also does it in a really tactful way. Tactful, that's not a good word for it. I meant tasteful. In a tasteful way.
Tactful can kind of mean the same thing.
Yeah, I guess. You know, I really think that Mark Ruffalo gives the best performance of the year in this movie of any actor or actress in any film. I really liked his character and the way he was able to develop it. And yeah, I mean, it's probably, at least in my estimation, from what I've seen, the best movie on investigative journalism there's ever been.
I wasn't a big fan of Ruffalo, personally. His voice bothered me.
Oh, that's what I loved.
I thought it was a little too affected for my tastes. It distracted me every single time. I think Keaton's great in this film. One of the things I wrote is it's a great ensemble film. I think there might be one too many people in it, just because it doesn't seem to flow as well. I think maybe, and I love John Slattery, but I don't think his character really does anything. But again, it's one of those films, and I wrote this in my write up. It's hard to make a newsroom exciting if you're trying to stick to the real deal. I work in a newsroom, and it's not exciting, but it can be. Like, and I think this movie should be applauded for not like over dramatizing things.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It really doesn't over dramatize anything, really. I mean, it kind of just lets the story play out on its own, and it doesn't feel forced or Hollywood or anything like that.
And I mean, the very real thing that happens when 9/11 happens, you're in the middle of an investigation, 9/11 happens, and they tell everybody, this is your focus now, is terrorism and 9/11. And, you know, there's no big, like, you know, it's just a thing that happens. It's not it doesn't seem to be something that's driving the plot. You know, it's an obstacle that they have to overcome, but it's not a, you know, it's not like a villainy turn, for lack of a better, kind of like, it's not like, like when you watch Concussion and like everything that fucking Mike O'Malley does, you know, there's no character like Mike O'Malley who's trying to ruin everything.
Right.
And I think that's a really, really nice trait. I don't love this movie as my top 10, like I did other movies like Boyhood and stuff, or as my top movie, but it is really well done. And, you know, probably the best investigative journalism movie I've seen. It must be crazy to think about taking down an institution like the Catholic Church.
Right, especially in a place like Boston.
Yeah, I wrote in my write-up that'd be like somebody in San Antonio taking down the Spurs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like Chachos.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chachos. I still find that reference that you made.
I don't remember. What are you talking about?
We were talking about the This Is How We Do It Spurs song. And you said something about LaMarcus at Chachos. Still makes me laugh.
I have to go back and listen to that.
You must be missing the hell out of Chachos,
dude. I haven't had it in a few months. Every time I come down, I was down there this past week to get some work done on my car because the dealership offered me a free oil change. So I had to go down, and I was getting stuff out of my storage unit, and it took too long, and I didn't get a chance to go eat there. I did hit up where did we go? We went to lunch somewhere. I don't remember it at all now. Oh, Luther's Hamburgers. Have you ever had Luther's? Pretty good.
No. Have you seen that they're fixing to build that Frontier Burger?
Yeah. I'm curious as hell about that.
Yeah, I am too.
Like Jim's, that's how they started, was like the Frontier Burger stand.
Right.
And now I'm just curious if they're going to have a bunch of different burgers or just the three burgers they have on the Jim's menu right now. Or
it should be open pretty soon. I mean, it looks like it's completely built. I drive by there once a week.
Mm. I need to go. To Chachos and then there when it's opening. I'll be down there this weekend. Maybe I'll hit up some Chachos.
I should clear that up. I don't drive by to see a Frontier Burgers open every week. It's just on my drive somewhere.
Like, yep, there it is.
Still not open.
Yeah, fuck. So that's it for our top 10. Not a great year for movies as far as I'm concerned.
Some stuff I really liked, but
I finally had to copy you when I wrote my top 10 intro. I was just not as enthralled this year as I have been before.
Yeah, I think that it was definitely a weak year. And it's funny because I wrote this too, is that it actually, you know, I actually thought that the beginning of the year was really good, and I was impressed with how good the first half of the year it was. And then, you know, we get all the awards and prestige movies, and I just wasn't impressed with anything.
Yeah, the awards season movies really bummed me out, not being that great. I think my biggest heartbreak was The Revenant not being what I expected, because I think you and I both had pretty high hopes for that movie.
Yeah,
and it just left me flat. And then stuff, you know, prestige stuff like Steve Jobs, I didn't care for. Carol couldn't really crack. We talked about last week. You know, Danish Girl, things like that just weren't, you know, they may have great performances, but they don't really kind of complete their jobs as great movies. A lot more of that this year. And then the summer kind of pissed me off too. Like, both Marvel movies stinking up the joint, especially after such high hopes with you know, after Joss Whedon's first Avengers, this one just being an overstuffed mess. And then Ant-Man with Paul Rudd, one of my favorite comedic actors, just not being that great. It was a very sad summer.
Yeah. I agree.
So what do we got to look forward to? Next week, Hateful Eight. Well, I only get to talk about The Revenant.
The Revenant, yeah. I think there's a movie called, like, The Forest or something.
I don't have any screening invites until, like, the 20th or something.
I have one. We have one here.
What is it for?
The Forest. Or let me see what the name of the movie is called. The Forest.
Oh.
It's some horror movie that has Natalie Dormer in it.
She's attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Very attractive. I've seen her boobs.
Congratulations.
What? I watched Game of Thrones. Yeah, so we'll get to talk about The Revenant, Hateful Eight. Maybe I'll go see Hateful Eight, since I haven't seen it yet. Now that all the hype about the traveling road show is over.
Yeah, after Tarantino was in Austin the other night.
Yeah.
Surprise Q&A.
It was him and Robert Rodriguez, because they're BFFs at the Ritz. The Ritz is hard to get into, because I think there's only two screens.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of the Hateful Eight stuff seemed to be people creaming their jeans over the 70mm.
It's the word of the day.
70mm presentation, as opposed to the actual film.
Which, by the way, well, never mind.
What?
No, never mind.
Okay, you were gonna say something bad about somebody else, weren't you?
I thought better of it.
You're gonna say something bad about someone that's an avid listener, weren't you?
No. It just like Kiko did last week.
I don't know what you're talking about. It got edited out. Okay, I edit out all, anytime somebody gets called out personally that we know, I edit it out.
I'm surprised you caught that.
Oh, I wrote it down.
That's really funny, actually.
We're not here to make enemies of people that we're friends with. You know, we can
talk frenemies.
Hey, that's a good word. You should use that.
Oh, yeah. I've never heard it before. Yeah. I was just in creating it.
All right. So, yeah. Revenant, Hateful Eight, The Forest, maybe. I don't know if I got an invite for that, but we'll see. Anything else next week?
Just our typical shenanigans as maybe. The best movie podcast in San Antonio.
Even though I'm not there, but sure. All right, so if you want to reach us, you can call us at 920-FILM-210. That's 920-3456-210. Email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. Find us on Twitter at Cinesnob, Facebook Cinesnob Critic. Out in front of the All Night Bookstore, you'll see Cody. He's got the cutoffs with the pockets hanging out. I'm at Jim's 24/7.
Eating chili and eggs.
God damn it.
We're at Chacho's.
I'm at Chacho's eating the big-ass chicken nachos with about half a pound of cheese on them. Oh, you know, we went to Kirby Lane the other day for lunch here.
I've never been there.
It's good. You have to wait a long time. But they have some great queso. So, like, we get chips and queso and then eat pancakes. Like, it's the most fucked up meal.
That sounds perfect to me.
Yeah, Kirby Lane, you should try it. They sell the pancake mix at HEB, by the way.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I saw the Whataburger pancake mix the other day, too.
What? I haven't seen that.
Yep.
Is Whataburger known for pancakes?
I guess so.
I didn't even know they served them.
I've had them before, I know, but it's been a while.
I've never thought of fast food pancakes as great. Like, they're all right. You know who makes a good pancake?
Pancakes?
You know who makes a good pancake? Chacho's.
The International House of...
No,
yes, they actually do.
They actually do. The Macho Chacho Breakfast. It is ridiculous amount of food. And it's like $5.99?
Oh, no. It's super cheap. And it's like pancakes, eggs, bacon, potatoes, beans.
Tortillas.
Yeah.
And a stack of pancakes.
And seriously, the pancakes are good. They're really good.
I know. It's the most fucked up thing.
Okay, look, we're going to talk to Chacho's right now and see if we can get some endorsements here.
Yeah.
We'll pay them to talk about them.
Or at least some free food when we come down.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add?
Nah.
Any shout-outs to your homies?
Give a big shout-out to Kiko Martinez, who's apparently now officially too good for this show.
He said he had family over, is what his message said. So.
Well, you know what, Jared? I'm having fun doing the show with you.
Thanks. It's more important than your family, right?
Yes.
My family's not even here, so... You know what? That you know that gets me out of doing anything for holidays.
Well,
since I have to travel, like I don't have to cook shit. It's like, oh hey, you want to bring a bottle of soda? I sure do. Otherwise, I would have had to cook shit. So
you normally cook shit?
I have for Thanksgiving before, but now that I live an hour and a half away, there's no.
Now that you're Austinite.
Yep, that's right. All right.
Oh, yeah, and we'll have a full recap of the Houston Film Critics Society Awards next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys are going. Have fun with that.
As presenters.
Right, what are you presenting? Poster?
I'm presenting Best Poster.
I signed you up for that one because I know how much you love posters.
I do love posters. Now I got to work on my speech because we have to write our own stuff.
Can you try to make it – try to do it like anti-comedy, like that Norm MacDonald roast –
yeah, they say you don't judge a book by its cover.
Go on.
I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, do you remember last year? Nobody's going to get this but you and me. But last year we had the programs, and Kiko's bio was like a full page long.
Oh yeah,
and everyone else was like a tiny paragraph, and Kiko's bio was like a page and a half.
Yeah, it's like all the Hispanic film festivals he's emceed, and
he looked like such a dick.
Yeah. What's new, right? All right, on that note, I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob Podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.